It is Tuesday, September 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. presidential nominees Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton hold their first debate. We'll get reaction.
You know, you have to remember this was Trump's first head-to-head debate. Clinton has been in nine of these in primaries.
NATO warns the West it is losing the information war against Russia and Islamic State. And a young Canadian singer gets international recognition for his hit music. It's all ahead. U.S. presidential candidates Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton put their contrasting views before potential voters Monday night as they squared off in the first of three head-to-head debates. Trump repeated his assertion that Clinton lacks the stamina to be president and said her policies have led to a range of problems facing the country, including the threat posed by the Islamic State group.
This is something that never should have happened. Now, you're talking about taking out ISIS, but you were there and you were Secretary of State when it was a little infant. Now it's in over 30 countries, and you're going to stop them? I don't think so.
Clinton portrayed Trump's economic plans as favoring the rich over the middle class and suggested he does not want to make his tax returns public because he's not as rich as he says or is hiding something that would be a conflict of interest if he were elected.
Maybe he's not as rich as he says he is. Second, maybe he's not as charitable as he claims to be. Third, we don't know all of his business dealings, but we have been told through investigative reporting that he owes about $650 million to Wall Street and foreign banks.
Jeffrey Skelly is a political analyst at the University of Virginia's Center for Politics. He told me about his perceptions of the debate.
I do think that for Trump, his talk about a number of different issues, not just foreign policy, but talking about Clinton's experience not necessarily being good experience, he called it bad experience, perhaps plays in here. And it's possible that that would help him a little bit, but I think for him, the main problem for Trump is that any you know, positives that he might have been able to win on that issue, foreign policy in general, I think he sort of lost when he went on this long spiel about whether or not he had backed the Iraq war in the first place. And he kind of bizarrely name-dropped Howard Stern and then Sean Hannity. And it was just sort of an incoherent moment in the debate. And if people were specifically paying attention to foreign policy questions or things such as a nuclear deterrent, I don't think that segment helped Trump all that much, particularly when you're looking at voters and thinking about how voters currently view Clinton as more presidential, particularly on questions of temperament. And I think that section of the debate probably didn't help Trump.
During the primary season, Trump seemed to use these debates against his rivals. Basically, he insulted them or would call them names or that kind of thing. This seemed, though, perhaps because of Secretary Clinton's experience, he had a harder time doing that.
Oh, yes. The head-to-head matchup made it more difficult for him to sort of get in some pot shots, as he did during the primary. You have to remember this was Trump's first head-to-head debate. Clinton has been in nine of these in primaries, five with Bernie Sanders and four with Barack Obama in 2008. So she had experience in this setting, whereas Trump, the smallest number of candidates on the stage that he'd experienced had been four in total late in the Republican primary. So he hadn't had to sort of be one pole of sort of the center of attention, two people on stage, you can't really escape. And so at times during the primary debate, he was able to sort of get off a sharp one-liner going after his opponent. And then, the debate might turn to somebody else because one of the other candidates wanted to talk, trying to get attention. And in this setting, it seemed like Hillary Clinton at times was quite happy to let Trump speak. In fact, Clinton didn't really interrupt Trump very much, whereas Trump did try to interrupt Clinton or at least throw in the occasional sort of side remark while she was speaking. And it just didn't work as well for him with just two people on stage.
Yeah, she seemed to smile quite a bit at him. And once, I think, at least once, said that he lived within his own reality.
Yeah, no, Clinton was evidently quite happy to let Trump talk at times during this debate. And especially during some of his sort of long, less coherent arguments. And I think there were actually a couple times where I thought I noticed Clinton seemed to be like perhaps stifling a laugh. And really, that it was just sort of as the debate wore on, this sort of happened more and more to Trump. In the early going, he was fine. In fact, he started out better than Clinton did. But as they stood up there, got more questions, Clinton definitely was trying to bait him at times. She made mention of, that obviously the tax returns thing was pretty notable. She was like, maybe he's not sharing that because it turns out maybe he's not worth as much. She went through sort of a catalog of reasons why that might not be the case. One of them being that maybe he hasn't paid any federal taxes and that he was trying to hide that. And, it's that kind of thing that got Trump going. And so Trump rose to, sort of went after the bait a number of times. And so I think Clinton felt, especially after the first 15, 20 minutes of the debate, that she was much more in control of the situation.
Well, it'll certainly be interesting to see where the next debates go from here.
Right. Really the important thing to remember is this. Even if a Trump supporter might say that Hillary Clinton won that debate, that person's still voting for Donald Trump. There's not any changing of minds going on here between Trump and Clinton or Clinton to Trump voters. If there are any people like that, they are very, very small in number. Really, the more important thing is to see whether or not Clinton's debate performance won over some undecideds or people who've been responding that they're voting for a third-party candidate, and if it energizes her base any, because there really is no question that Trump's base is more energized. Now, there was a lot of talk about this in 2012, that polls showed that Republicans were more enthusiastic. Well, it ended up not mattering because Barack Obama won by about 4 percentage points nationally. But Clinton's biggest fear has to be that the Democratic base doesn't really show up for her. And I think she needed a performance like that last night to sort of help gin up enthusiasm among her base, but also maybe win over some voters who were thinking about casting a third-party ballot or were undecided, don't like either of the candidates, but perhaps Clinton was able to make the case that Trump just isn't presidential enough. She made arguments that he was unstable. And I think the problem for Trump is that his performance at times last night fed into that narrative. So we'll just have to see if the polls end up showing that Clinton made gains. If she didn't, that should be very concerning to her. But, we'll just have to sort of wait and see what happens with the polls.
That's Jeffrey Skelly, a political analyst at the University of Virginia's Center for Politics in Charlottesville. Well, joining me by phone from New York is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, I'm sure there's a range of reaction from social media to this debate.
Oh, absolutely. The talk continues on social media about the debate, but the hashtag that's been trending all through today is hashtag Trump won. And Trump supporters are saying, well, he clearly won. Look at all of these online polls that say that he won. The problem is a lot of people are pointing out that those online polls may have been manipulated by Trump supporters in some message boards. So there's a lot of back and forth on what that means. Hillary supporters are saying, let's wait for the actual polls to come out and see what those bring. But this Trump wins or Trump won a hashtag is causing quite a lot of debate. You have the Trump people saying, regardless of the polls, he made good solid points. Hillary dodged the questions. Whereas Hillary supporters are saying, okay, if you want to use hashtag Trump won, we're going to say Trump won the most interruptions or Trump won the least coherent point. So they're kind of trying to flip that on itself. But we'll see if any other hashtags develop as a result of that. And actually, apropos of the debate last night, and perhaps timed to the debate last night, today is hashtag National Voter Registration Day. So lots of effort today to get people to register to vote. And actually, the other hashtag that's trending is hashtag iRegistered that people can use if they have registered to vote. So there are lots of tweets on instructions how to register to vote. Even here where I am at the VOA Bureau in New York, in real life, there are people out on the street right outside our building here encouraging people to register and giving them information. But even here, you have a back and forth. You have some people saying, well, if the choices are Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, why should I bother registering to vote to pick one of them? People are countering that argument, though, and saying, you know what, even if you write in I abstain or write in a third party or just write in a name, it's still your duty to register and still your duty to participate in American democracy.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky in New York City. Some of the top stories trending. Afghan forces struggle in an increasingly deadly fight. The World Trade Organization says trade growth slows, crimps the economy, and faces political challenges. The United States calls for immediate release of its citizens detained in Yemen, and a Somalia radio journalist is shot dead in Mogadishu. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
California houseboat residents living on the San Francisco Bay back in the 1980s reported a mysterious buzzing hum that began suddenly in late evening and ended just as quickly in the morning. After a thorough investigation, it was determined that a male fish called plainfin midshipman, hoping to attract a mate, was actually responsible for the mysterious nighttime sounds. Here's a quick sample of the fish's song. Now, a new study published in the journal Cell Biology proposes the hormone melatonin, which regulates the sleep-wake cycle in humans and other animals, does the opposite with the male plainfin midshipman fish. The study's authors discovered that the melatonin keeps the singing fish on its night-to-morning serenade schedule. In addition to its timekeeping abilities, they found the hormone also lengthened the calls when the fish sang. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, singer Justin Bieber gets international recognition for his hits. NATO commanders are calling on the West to step up its efforts to combat and counter the information war being waged by adversaries. The commanders warned that countries like Russia are exploiting the freedom of the press in Western media to spread disinformation. Henry Ridgewell reports from London on the new age of information warfare.
The vanguard of Russia's forceful takeover of Crimea in 2014. The unmarked, heavily armed gunmen, now widely known as the Little Green Men. Moscow initially denied they were Russian military. Yet, weeks later, similar unidentified armed units appeared in eastern Ukraine. The simultaneous deployment of disinformation and military power has become known as hybrid warfare. Speaking at this month's United Nations General Assembly, Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko said such tactics are being waged against the whole Western world.
Political pressure, blatant propaganda, interference with the electoral process, economic coercion, secret subversive and military operation, cyber attack, misuse of diplomatic measures. These are modern and convenient methods of the undeclared war.
At a conference on information warfare at the London-based Royal United Services Institute this week, NATO's Director of Strategic Communications said the West is playing catch-up.
The technology is ours. The marketing powerhouses are in our countries. Yet, we're having this discussion against the feeling of being pushed by different actors. Russia, Daesh, also China, in more subtle ways.
The conference focused on the growing reach of Russian state media, such as the 24-hour news channel Russia Today, or RT, often accused of being a propaganda outlet for the Kremlin. Senior editor at The Economist, Edward Lucas, argued channels like RT should not be considered as journalism.
Russia has really grasped the post-truth environment, and they will lie about things absolutely brazenly. They understand the weaknesses of our media in the post-Cold War environment, that we prioritise fairness over truth.
Lucas said the West should do more about what he termed social media hygiene.
There's a real problem with comment fields and with fake social media accounts, particularly on Twitter. The Russians are putting lots and lots of money into creating tens of thousands of trolls.
NATO officials said Russia includes information strategy as a key pillar of its conflict planning, but in the West it is often handed off to separate public relations teams.
We are still fighting on the margins, when actually a properly funded strategic communication effort is incredibly cheap compared to other costs.
Leyti warned Russia was deploying disinformation and hybrid warfare in its intervention in Syria, most recently in the disputed bombing of an aid convoy outside Aleppo earlier this month. He added the West must learn how to fight back. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me now to tell me about the latest honor for a singer from north of the U.S. border.
Well, Sarah, today we're talking about your favorite pop star and mine, Justin Bieber.
Oh.
Justin is back with a brand new song. And actually, he's got a couple of new songs off his Purpose album. Been a great year and a great new album for him. The Purpose album is his fifth album. And all five of his albums have reached number one. Three of them debuted at number one. He's currently on a world tour. I got a bunch of Justin Bieber news for you. But the main story today is about the fact that Justin is tied with Beyonce for the lead in nominations for the upcoming MTV Europe Music Awards show, which is happening on November 6th in Rotterdam in the Netherlands. So it's going to be a big show, and Justin is nominated for Song of the Year, Record of the Year, a number of other accolades, but we're going to play a song from Purpose that is up for Song of the Year. It's called Sorry.
You gotta go and get angry at all of my honesty. You know I try, but I don't do too well with apologies. I hope I don't run out of time, cause someone call a referee.
Of course, I think I've heard that for months on the radio.
Yes,
over
you have.
And over.
We all have. Now, Justin, by the way, has just achieved his fourth number one R&B chart hit with his latest hit called Let Me Love You, featuring DJ Snake. And he has set a sales record for the song Sorry, which we just heard. It's the most streamed song ever in the UK since they began keeping track of such. It now has 100 million streams. So congratulations to Justin Bieber on that accomplishment. It's been a great year for him. He's also starting a new record label with his longtime manager, Scooter Braun.
Wow.
So everywhere you go, there's Justin Bieber news. Some not so good. He got into a bar fight last week while on tour in Munich, Germany. And apparently it was a crowded nightclub, and there was some pushing and shoving, and Justin was in the middle of it. And so it turned into a fisticuffs. But no one was hurt. And then he went on his way for his tour, his world tour, which then went to France and Norway. And so he'll be in the Netherlands for the big award show November 6th, and hopefully he'll win most of his nominations.
Well, best of luck to him, and dare I note, he's yet another Canadian.
Yes.
A lot of successful Canadian musicians, we know. All right, thanks a lot, Larry. Larry London, he's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
Is it too late?
to say sorry, 'cause I'm missing more than just your body.
The music of Justin Bieber. Well, the Americas has become the first region of the world to eliminate measles. That's according to an international committee of experts with the Pan American Health Organization. The last case of endemic measles was reported in the Americas in 2002. Both measles and rubella, another childhood illness, still circulate worldwide, and isolated outbreaks of the disease have been reported in the Americas. Measles is the fifth vaccine-preventable disease to be eliminated in the Americas, and the disease remains one of the leading causes of death among young children globally, despite the availability of a safe and effective vaccine. Well, that's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In his final address to the UN General Assembly, United States President Barack Obama spoke of a world defined by increasing prosperity, yet torn by uncertainty and strife. Progress on many fronts, but threatened by division and violence, with the temptation of too many to surrender to the siren songs of religious fundamentalism, sectarianism, or aggressive nationalism. President Obama described a number of accomplishments that have improved the lives of people around the world over the last 8 years, including the global economy's resilience after the greatest financial disaster in modern times, the establishment of a framework to protect the planet from the ravages of climate change, the removal of terrorist safe havens, the resolution of the Iranian nuclear issue through diplomacy, the opening of relations with Cuba, and the appearance of a democratically elected civilian leader in Burma, and over the last 25 years, he noted, the doubling of the number of the world's democracies. At the same time, however, deep fault lines in the existing international order have been exposed, said Mr. Obama.
Around the world, refugees flow across borders in flight from brutal conflict. Across vast swaths of the Middle East, basic security, basic order has broken down. We see too many governments muzzling journalists and quashing dissent and censoring the flow of information.
In addition, Mr. Obama noted, terrorist networks endanger open societies, spurring anger against innocent immigrants and Muslims, and powerful nations spurn the restraints put on them by international law. President Obama said the world faces a choice, to press forward with a better model of cooperation or retreat into a world ultimately in conflict along age-old lines of nation and tribe and race and religion. The key to the first choice is recognizing the need for tolerance that results from respecting all human beings, Mr. Obama said, as well as recognizing the universal desire of all people to have a voice in the decisions that affect their lives. Our identities, he declared, do not have to be defined in opposition to others, but rather by a belief in liberty and equality and justice and fairness. My faith in those principles, President Obama said, forces me to recognize that I can best serve my own people by making sure that my actions seek what is right for all people. Our governments and this United Nations should reflect this irreducible truth.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.